In medical research, clinical trials are how new treatments, drugs, or surgeries get tested. They're how researchers figure out whether treatments work and whether they're safe and effective. But nationwide, clinical trials have a diversity problem. People of color are often underrepresented. It means that what researchers learn doesn't apply to as many people as it should. That can perpetuate poor health outcomes. Researchers from the Advocate Aurora Research Institute, which serves Wisconsin and Illinois, recently checked on the health system's own clinical trials. As part of the study, the researchers sat down with Black, Hispanic, and Asian community members to hear how they think diversity in these trials can be improved. Dr. Veronica Fitzpatrick is a research scientist who led the study, and Osandi Ozani-Lore is a senior research associate who helped with the community interviews. They joined WUWM's Lena Tran to share what they learned.
So the study was funded by the Advocate Charitable Foundation. So they gave us money to sort of look at the equity in our COVID clinical trials. And so through this, we were sort of like, well, if we're going to look at just our COVID clinical trials, which there were only like half a dozen, and Advocate Aurora runs like 80 to 120 clinical trials. So our COVID clinical trials were not a very large, you know, section of our portfolio. We sort of were like, okay, if we want to look at the equity in clinical trial in our COVID clinical trials, why don't we look at the equity in all of our clinical trials? And then why don't we look at how representative this is of our health system or our clinics or the area? And so we sort of took our funding and tried to answer bigger questions with it.
Just to back up, this is going to sound maybe really obvious, but why is it important that your clinical trials are representative of the community that you're serving?
Science and clinical trials in general is a fundamental kind of subject where if our trials are not equitable or if it doesn't show enough diversity, those results get perpetuated. And it creates, you know, kind of bias, too. It creates a situation where a certain group of people are not, they don't get access to innovative healthcare. And it creates health outcomes disparity. If we have a study in that sense that's lacking diversity, it gets perpetuated. So somebody else would pick that study and, you know, make it a building block of their study. So solving that problem at its initial stage is very important.
It's not everyone is white men.
Exactly. Groundbreaking observation.
Yeah, exactly.
Not everyone is white men.
My research actually is mostly in care delivery and prenatal care. As we're seeing across this country, there's a really, really big issue with Black women in particular having, you know, maternal and their baby outcomes are just just embarrassingly poor in this country. And that's not anything that has to do with our healthcare system in general. That's just like across the board. It's so critical to have people enrolled in these studies who are going to be benefactors of the results.
Are there examples of medications or treatments that historically, like, their effectiveness was shaped by race or gender, and people realize, like, oh, it's because we just weren't assessing how well they work on all the right people?
I think heart disease is a really good example of that. I think that generally it was thought, I mean, because all clinical trials for heart disease were in white men, you know, and the way heart disease looks in women is very, very, very different than men. And the drugs and the treatments weren't as effective in women. And so finally, they were like, wait a minute, maybe we should include women in clinical trials. And it turns out that it was totally different.
So you set out to do this inventory. What are the trends that you find?
So we found that the people most likely to participate in clinical trials are white women over the age of 65. We also found that people of color are not as well represented in clinical trials. And so we set out to create like this environment where we could talk to the people in the community that we serve and see what the barriers are, what's preventing them from participating in clinical trials, and what solutions that they think that we could apply and make them participate more in clinical trials.
So what kinds of things did you hear from them?
I think the most interesting thing was when we started to conduct the interviews, trust was one of the things that was just in the back of my mind, because we all have that little bias in our heads. But what we found it was trust was a byproduct of the need for more knowledge about clinical trials, more of a presence in the community. If the people that we are trying to approach about clinical trials don't understand clinical trials because they haven't been exposed enough, or they don't know us as well, it's difficult for them to participate and trust us enough to participate in clinical trials.
I think there's a lot of mistrust among communities of color when it comes to any sort of experimental medicine, right? Very, very well-founded sort of lack of trust. And I think to Asandi's point, you know, not all clinical trials look the same, right? Like some are experimental devices and drugs, and some are just, you know, an app on your phone. And so I think there's a misunderstanding that, you know, everything is this sort of, you know, take this drug that we've never tested or try this thing in your heart that we've never done before, when a lot of clinical trials are not that. You know, the lack of knowledge about the depth and breadth and what they entail and how they are considered legitimate treatments, I think was one thing that sort of rose to the top, was not so much that people wouldn't participate and not so much that people wouldn't participate despite not trusting the healthcare system, was just that they didn't know much about them. They didn't know anything about them until they were sick. You know, they didn't know where to even find clinical trials. They didn't know how to get more information about clinical trials. You know, and that was one of the things where we were like, oh, okay, so what can we do as a healthcare system to better educate the community so they wouldn't pass up this opportunity to be part of a potentially innovative treatment?
Yeah. How did it feel as someone who's, as a health professional, as a researcher, to hear some of those things?
There is an understanding to it. You know, one participant actually said, you know, when there is a study or a clinical trial going on, they see us. They feel that presence in the community. We're there recruiting. We're there talking to them about the study. But then when that trial or that study is over, we're gone. Because then we retreat back to do our analysis and our writing. But what we've done is we've created a relationship and a connection, and then we just kind of stop. And so I can understand that. And it's really important to have a constant connection with the people that we are serving or presenting this clinical trials to. So it's not a case of, oh, we just need you for now and we don't need you anymore.
What do you think it would look like to shift that relationship?
You know, we got so many solutions from our community members and even our clinical trial staff. And one of the things that we got out of it was creating a presence, creating some kind of connection. First of all, just having a sit down with them and listening to them.
Mm-hmm. I've been a health disparities researcher for over a decade, so I'm certainly not surprised when vulnerable populations, that could look like anything. That could be people of color, that could be lower income people, that could be people who do not speak English as a primary language. I mean, anybody who's really at a disadvantage in our super highly literate healthcare system. You know, Asandi, I think you said it super well, which is like as researchers, we take from our communities and sometimes forget to give it back. And we, you know, what are the dissemination products of research? It's manuscripts, it's, you know, peer-reviewed papers, it's, you know, presentations at medical conferences, and that is not where the community is. Right. And those are not things that the community understands. And so I think it's really on us, and we're lucky because we work in a healthcare system, so we can actually show what the results are and we can't actually make changes in our healthcare system. But I think that's, you know, people's interview time and people's opinions means a lot to them. And to just take them and not give it back to the community, I think doesn't close that loop. And we're really, really trying to close that loop.
This is really interesting because people talk about this in journalism, too. How can we not be extractive and take people's stories and say, like, bye, never see you again? Yeah. And how can it be, like, more symbiotic?
Mm-hmm. That's so funny because you're totally right. It's the exact same thing because it's like these are who these people are. Like, what they're giving us, the vulnerability that they're allowing us to share in is something that, you know, ends up being, you know, a line in a paper when it's not.
It's their life.
Experiences in life. Yeah. And it's just we have direct interactions with the people that we're taking, you know, this data and their experiences from. And so we take it very seriously to try to do something with it. It's not just for funding. It's to take the lessons learned and try to implement them as best as we can.
Going back to the listening sessions, I'm wondering if either of you have a memorable moment. Was there a breakthrough or something that really surprised you?
I was kind of surprised by how many people were willing to participate in clinical trials. It's a lot of interactions with the healthcare system. It's you have to drive there. You mm-hmm. have to, sit there. You have to have some sort of treatment schedule. Like, yeah. But I don't think there was a single person that we talked to who was like, no way.
Right.
I would never do that. Mm-hmm. Like, most people were like, yeah, okay. And we talked to old people. We talked to young people. We talked to almost everybody identified as a person of color. That was one of our inclusion criteria. But, yeah, I was really surprised by that. Because even myself, I'd be like, I don't know. It seems like,
I don't know.
Like a lot of work. I don't know. Yeah. But really, people were pretty enthusiastic. And again, like, even though people were like, I don't totally trust the healthcare system, they were still willing to participate. And I was just like, that's says a lot. Because I think there's this there's this misconception that, like, people of color don't want to interact with the healthcare system. And that is not true based on the people we interviewed.
Which is like a scientist's dream, right? There's this whole pool of data, but you've just got to bridge the gap. You know,
totally.
They're willing to share it.
So. I think we make, as researchers, as, you know, predominantly white people, I think we make a lot of assumptions about how people feel, you know, and it's not until we go into the community and ask these questions directly where we can really fight those assumptions. And I think a lot of people assume, like, well, if you don't trust the healthcare system, then you're not going to participate in a clinical trial. And the community was loud and clear. They're like, we are happy to participate in a clinical trial. We literally don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
And that's that point with that implicit bias, you know, because we already think in our heads, oh, you know, they don't want to. And maybe that's why we don't have them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Veronica, there was this op-ed where you mentioned that Advocate Aurora has been using the past year to see how some of these suggestions could be folded in. I'm wondering if there's any more specifics that you can share on what that's looked like.
Yeah, we formed three sort of steering committees. One of them is focused on the community and sort of how, to Lasandi's point, how we can actually meaningfully, you know, integrate into the community. And a lot of that is partnering with our community health department. The second part of it is working on our translational services, because one of the things that also came out in our data was that there was definitely disparity when it came to Black people, but there was also a lot of disparity in people who do not speak English as a primary language. So people who identified as Hispanic and actually people who identified as Asian. And then the third part of it was how we can better use our medical record system to screen people. So one of the things that we found out in the results was that it was really hard to figure out who was being approached for clinical trials. We knew who was being consented, but you have to say yes at that point to be consented. So we've now integrated something into our medical record system where we can actually really easily document who is screened to see if there's disparity in who's being approached, which is where implicit bias would totally show up. One of the things that we're trying to do is that we tend to, like, lump groups together. Like, we tend to be, like, Hispanic, and, like, there's a very big difference between, say, Puerto Rican and Mexican, or we do Asian, and there's a very big difference between, you know, Japanese or Chinese or, you know, like Laotian, you know, and also different likelihood of speaking English as a primary language. So I would love in the future to figure out how to, like, differentiate these subgroups, because I think it's going to be very telling. But that said, we're working with our translational team to try to figure out how to, like, just better be prepared for people who might need to be consented, allowing their families to be there for support and stuff like that. And then, like I said, we're trying to integrate more meaningfully into the community.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Veronica and Osandi, thank you so much for joining me on Lake Effect and talking about your work.
Thank you for having us.
That was WUWM's Lena Tran, speaking with Dr. Veronica Fitzpatrick and Osandi Ozani-Lohr from Advocate Aurora Research Institute.